Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.
Exploring our oneness with spirit and each other. Unity Online Radio.
Welcome to World Spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions with Paul John Roach, minister of Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. Discover the universal principles present in all the world's religions and take an incredible journey to new understanding. Now, here is your host, Paul John Roach.
So, hello and welcome to World Spirituality on the Unity Online Radio Network. I'm your host, yes, Paul John Roach, coming to you from Unity Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas. And I like that word, commonality. There's so much divisiveness, if you want to pronounce it that way, in the world. And it's nice to find common ground. And of course, in Unity, we believe that we are all connected in spirit, that there's one of us here inherently. We are of spirit. We are one with God, one with each other. And this is the divine antidote to all the separating and dividing consciousness that appears to be out there in our world right now. And so we've just experienced the atrocity in Orlando as the show goes live on Tuesday, a couple of days after that event. And so that is in our hearts and minds, and we're uplifting the fact that there's more decency and compassion in everybody than there is the few who are filled with hatred and evil intent. So we uplift those qualities and find them commonly available in everyone that we meet. So God is in charge and all is well. So today I'm joined again by my loving wife, Wendy. We're going to discuss the spirituality of England, ancient and modern, and look at it as a sort of a, through a lens to see how we look at spirituality and an awareness of things divine in America and other parts of the world too. And we're going to look both at the people and the landscape and note similarities and differences between the old country and the new in the U.S. and trends throughout our world today. If you're interested in Stonehenge and ISIS, how to be kind to each other as well as the mystical, there may be something in today's show for you. So it's a pleasure to welcome Wendy on this particular journey.
Welcome, hello, Wendy. Paul. It's good to be here.
And part of the reason why we're doing this today is that our journey today and through this show mirrors the one that we recently took to England. We stayed mostly in rural areas, visiting friends, old and new. And, the first day that when we arrived and got out of Heathrow eventually, because it was a bit snarled up, and started driving west, we went to two sites that are very powerful. Silbury Hill, the largest man-made mound in Europe, and then the West Kennet Long Barrow, which is about a mile from Silbury Hill, which is one of the biggest long barrows ever created, I think, certainly the biggest in Britain, and it has very large guard stones at the entrance, and then a very long earthen barrow that extends for a couple of hundred feet. And both of these, I think, are at least 4,000 years old. I think the West Kennet Long Barrow is at least 5, and Silbury Hill is very ancient too, and quite mysterious. The West Kennet Long Barrow, of course, was used to bury chieftains and others, and nobody really knows what Silbury Hill was about. But very, very potent and powerful artifacts, aren't they, Wendy?
They certainly are. And now today, the birds are playing at the entrance over the entrance rocks to the burrow, which was lively and interesting. It was like they were there to greet you.
Right. They were the swallows, weren't they, when we were there?
Yeah.
Yeah. They were nesting inside. Mm-hmm. You know, growing up in Britain as I did, you know, I was imbued with all these places that have these quite long histories, you know, and so it gives a sort of a vertical dimension, and the main road passes right by Selbury Hill, and you can almost forget it's there. But you know, then you realize, my goodness, I'm looking at something that was built in prehistoric times, you know, by a very different people than who the English are today. And yet it's still there. It's part of this landscape. And, you know, I think we miss that in the States sometimes because we don't have that vertical history. I know a lot of people are attracted to a Native American First Peoples theology and spirituality because it gives it that historic depth to the landscape, but there's something to be said for the, you know, we could say ghosts, but resonances, right? There's still a vibration, isn't there? Did you feel it at all in
those places? It's magical. Yes, it's magical. I mean, and mysterious feeling.
And lots of people, of course, today. Honoring that, you know, there's a sort of an upswing in earth religions and Wicca and other modalities, druids, etc. And we noticed, didn't we, that a lot of the trees close to these sites, you know, have ribbons and necklaces hanging from them, you know, as a sort of a totem, as a leaving something of the person there so that it can be part of the healing energy. And I've seen more of that recently than I did certainly when I was a kid. There's more sense of wanting to be connected to nature and to the historic.
And we saw that in Wales. Out in the country when we would go visit like a wishing well or something, people would have tied things to the trees. But, you know, they did that also on the fence. Up where in Oklahoma, I've forgotten exactly where we are, but we were, Paul, but you can fill that in a minute here. But we found them on the fence where the last battle of, who was it? I've forgotten.
Yeah, it was the Black Kettle National Grassland. It was, it's holy to the... The Cheyenne and other Native American mm-hmm. peoples I think it's in the Panhandle, isn't it, of Oklahoma, like you said. Yeah, they put prayer bundles on the fences and trees there because they consider that to be a holy place. It was another place where Custer attempted to massacre a village of people and killed some, but he was surprised by the defense, and he had an escape, I think, eventually. But they did kill the chief, Black Kettle, so he's remembered there as well. But yeah, powerful place, you know. Mm-hmm. And again, you could feel the energy. Actually, I burst into tears there. It was so palpable, and you know, and I didn't, you know, I was surprised I did so, but it just hit me. Because you could feel the certain sadness there still, but also a certain spirituality. Yeah.
And it's amazing when people gather. I mean, other people can feel it too. I mean, you're not the only one. It's like and that's why people do things like that, because they're feeling that portal opening up of spirit there. The only other time I've ever seen any, you know, necklaces or things in trees is going up the ski lift at Breckenridge after Mardi Gras, but I don't think that's what you're talking about.
Yeah, there we go. But even that is a desire, isn't it? To connect
that
with, you know, with energies, you know, and the reveling and the Dionysian enjoyment of, you know, of drinking and partying and all that is also... you know, part of the old cycle as well. You know, there were times where there were festivities kind of thing. And I think we long for this. We long for to be connected again to some to some pattern of the year. You know, and so there's one evidence thing, of that.
Yeah, that was one thing that we saw a lot of in the rural towns. Driving through England was all of the markets and all of the festivals coming up. They all had some type of a festival coming up where they would be celebrating. You know, something food or getting together. They were posted in their pubs and then meet at the town hall or this pub or in this parking lot or whatever. And it was like the celebration of the summertime.
Yes, absolutely. And you know, when the weather's good, because, you know, it could be kind of miserable sometimes. And even when we were in London, it was 57 degrees, I think, was the high, which was unseasonably cold for London especially. So we had to wear a coat. It's June and we're freezing. So, yeah, it can get cold. So you have to celebrate the summer. You know, you've never been to Glastonbury and to the tour before, had you, when we went up there? What was that like for you?
Well, just to say what the tour is a tower that's on top of this hill, and it's absolutely gorgeous. It's the view is spectacular, and there's people all over just sitting in the grass and enjoying that. It's like talking about widening your vision or expanding your vision, sitting up on top of a hill like that with an ancient ruin behind you is just really something that gives you the expansion of vision that, and just how small of a piece of time that you grasp and are here on Earth.
Yeah, and of course, you know, for many of us who are familiar with Glastonbury, it's quite a center for spirituality. You know, traditionally, it's where Joseph of Arimathea brought the Holy Grail, or the Cup of the Last Supper. There's traditions that King Arthur and Guinevere are buried in the abbey, you know, in the valley below. And there's lots of other myths and legends surrounding it, and a place of power to the druids and whatnot. And there is sort of a spiral around the tor, isn't there, but around the hill there.
Mm-hmm.
And some people say, oh, that's just landslip, you know, caused by sheep grazing. Other people say, oh, no, it's a, you know, ceremonial spiral for the priests to go up the hill. So nobody really knows, but it's definitely, there's a certain energy there. You know, like you said, there's a church tower. The church was destroyed, I think, in an earthquake or lightning, and all that's left is this tower, but it becomes a very iconic looking thing, and you can see it for miles around because it's on these old marshes that surround the Isle of Avalon, as it's sometimes called. And of course, many books have been written about it. But yeah, it's surrounded on three sides by hills, and then you've got in the distance, and then you've got these flat marshlands. And we were staying in a little house, weren't we, on the marshes next to a river there, and that was beautiful too.
It certainly was, and when I had jet lag that first night that we were there in this darling little place, that and they had built a bird blind that was on the river, and you could watch the birds come in and all of their habitat. It was out in their garden. It was just quite a lovely place, but having jet lag, I woke up in the middle of the night, and it was a full moon. And there was this mist hanging over the old marshes, and it was really, I mean, it's making my hair raise on my arm right now. It just was such a foreign-looking landscape, and very mysterious-looking, but inviting with the full moon.
Yes, yeah, very nice. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm always amazed at how, you know, people are connected to nature, both in America and in Britain. You know, there's a delight in things. There's a lot of bird watchers, I know, in America. People love to go out into nature and appreciate the natural world. But it's particularly true, I think, in Britain, that people are, in general, appreciative of their environment. And, of course, Britain is so tiny compared to the states, but it seems large because there's so much packed into a small area. And just going 30 miles down the road, you feel like you've gone a couple of hundred because it's the roads are small and there's no sprawl. You know, you have the little village and then countryside. There's no
And small means one car wide. Small,
right? Yeah, and some of the roads are just one car wide, so there's lots of lay-bys, as they call them, so you can back up into an area and let the other car pass or whatever. But it's
traffic.
Kind of hair-raising, isn't it?
It is, but there's like hardly any traffic, and that is what is so just uniquely divine about it. But you know, we've talked many times also about how not just Texas, but the whole United States, we sprawled out. We built strip shopping centers down our highways. We do things differently. Where their pattern of construction had to do with keeping the village tight and for safety reasons, et cetera, for survival reasons, and so they patterned differently, and so the landscape therefore is different. And you go, it seems like you're out in the country when you're not really that far from the next village.
Right, exactly. Yeah, that sense of, jealously guarding the land that you have, you know, because it's a rare commodity, really. So, but what struck me was the intensely rural nature. Once you get out of London, into the countryside, it seems very, very unspoiled. And when I was a kid, we'd always laugh at the Americans who'd come over and say, "I love your little old England, it's so quaint." And now I'm going back to Britain and thinking the same thing. And it's so quaint compared to some of the places that I'm familiar with here in America. One place we went to was Wells Cathedral, and it's one of my particular favorites because I love the architecture.
Mine too.
Did you like it too? Yeah.
Yes, it was one of my favorites.
Got a certain quality to it, doesn't it? And again, I think there's 49 cathedrals in England and Wales that were created during the Middle Ages. And, some are better than others, you could say, if you want to put them on a list. But all of them are pretty spectacular. And I think Wells comes to the top of the list, along with, say, mm-hmm. places like Salisbury. But just fantastic examples of amazing architecture, really, and the skill of the masons, and the sheer amount of energy and time that went into creating these things. You know, they were the centerpiece of any town, weren't they? A lot of energy was put into them.
Well, it seems like they're still a centerpiece in some of the villages and some of the towns. They're very proud of them, but they're still alive with people using them in different various ways.
Yes, and that was good to see. You know, they were playing croquet on the lawn of the Bishop's Palace, and the choristers were rehearsing, for the services, and a lot of tourists, of course. But it seemed very much alive, and the gardens, as always, the gardens are so magnificent in Britain, and there's some amazing ones at Wells, and it's also the source of the Wells. There's thousands of gallons of water that bubble up from the Mendip Hills behind Wells, and then pour out onto the Somerset Levels, and that makes it magical too, because you have this very pure water coming out that's percolated down through the limestone of the hills, and that gives it a certain quality too. Of course, it was
being alive and vibrant.
Right.
Yes.
Yeah.
Do you have some of these pictures on your Facebook page, don't you?
Yeah, if anybody wants to take a look, go to my Facebook page, and also you can go to my website, pauljohnroach.com, and we'll try and put some up on the World Spirituality Facebook page too. All right, we're at the break. I'm talking with Wendy, my wife, about our recent visit to England, and when we come back, we'll talk a little more about some of the artifacts, but also some of the people we met and their understanding of the divine, and or not. Some don't have a connection. So join us then after these messages from Unity.
Wouldn't you like to share the programs that inspire you most with audiences around the world? That's easier than ever with mobile giving. Just text Unity Radio to 72727 and help us continue offering spiritual programs that change lives.
Have you asked your soul what it wants? Or are you so busy meeting the needs of everyone else? Family, friends, children, bosses, that you haven't checked in with the part of you that matters most? Janet Connor asked this question and received an answer. Your soul wants five things. That's it. Five things. Your soul wants to connect with Source, commit to values, serve a purpose, express itself creatively, and last, it longs to create a beautiful, abundant life. Janet Connor teaches five wisdom habits that meet those needs. You can take each course separately or register for the complete Your Soul Wants Five Things series and receive $1,000 in bonuses for free. Visit JanetConnor.com and explore all five courses in her signature series, Your Soul Wants Five Things. Your soul will thank you.
The world is full of voices, advertising, television, politics, colleagues, family, and friends. All are too happy to tell us how to live. In all of that noise, it's easy to miss the one voice that matters, your own soul. What would happen if you could hear that voice? Imagine the clarity, confidence, and courage that would be yours and the life you could create. Join Janet Connor, best-selling author of Writing Down Your Soul, The Lotus and the Lily, and Your Soul Wants Five Things, as she and her guests explore how to hear the call of the soul and create the soul-directed life. Live Thursday at 1 p.m. Central, only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Go inside to find.
You've been listening to World Spirituality with host Reverend Paul John Roach. To learn more about Reverend Paul John Roach, visit his website, pauljohnroach.com. Or if you have questions, email him at pauljohnroach@yahoo.com. We now return to World Spirituality.
All right, welcome back to today's show. I'm with my wife, Wendy. We're talking about our recent trip to England and exploring some of the spirituality of England, both ancient and modern, and ways in which it's different from America, but also commonalities that we all share. It was a place I visited when I was 15. It's a hill fort on a high piece of ground in Dorset called Pilsdon Pen. And I always want to go back there, and so we went back there this time, and it hadn't really changed much in those 48 years, or however many long it's been, since I last saw it, and that's a long time ago. But it was fascinating to go back there and just compare, you know, what I felt back then to the way I felt now, and also to take someone I love there, which was a blast, so... very nice to be up there, and you could feel the presence of those old Celtic tribes, because they built the hill fort there in Iron Age times, and probably based on a Bronze Age fort that was there from even older peoples that were in that region. But you enjoyed it up there too, didn't you, Wendy?
Yes, I did. It again also had a spectacular view from it, but it also, you feel the vibe of you can really think about what it would be like to live up there and to have that as your protection, being on top of a hill like that and then having the huge ditch that was dug around the perimeter of it. And then also there was still the hills where some actually changed the topography where the they had used rabbit as a way of food and, of course, their pelts, et cetera. And so they had these bumps, like, on top that were from where the rabbit raising had gone on.
Right, and that was sort of later on. That was back in the Middle Ages when they did that. Yeah, so they were using that open area to breed rabbits at that time. Mm-hmm. Well, and again, you know, for those interested in the way language develops, Pilsdon pen in Welsh means head or top, and so it's a hill. So even in the midst of England there, you've got an old Welsh name, because the tribes that were there were Celtic before they were pushed west by the Angles and Saxons. So still the ancient names are there in the place names, and you see that in the ancient names for rivers too. Afterwards, we went down to a beautiful village called Whitchurch Canonicorum, and what's interesting about that, it's the only place in England outside of Westminster Abbey that has relics of a saint that still exists, because most of them were destroyed during the Reformation. And this is the 10th century female saint, actually, that is there. Candida, I think, or Saint Wit. She has two names, and hence Whitchurch, I guess. And anyway, she was living in the 10th century, and the relic chamber has spaces below the bones where you can put your hands and legs for healing, or leave healing messages. And there were a lot of healing messages in there. But, you know, back in the Middle Ages, I think it was one of the biggest pilgrimage places in England. And when we were there, we were the only people in the church. And it's a sleepy little village with beautiful oak trees and cottages around and et cetera. But it had a certain feel, didn't it?
Well, it certainly did. And you said sleepy, but there were, I mean, significant signs around the church itself that were different events were going on, and when the pub opened, all of a sudden there was a line. Where the people came from, I don't know, but there was a line once
right.
The pub was open. But we encountered a cat a black cat down this darling little garden path that led to the church through the through the graveyard, and so that was really. You could be transformed into another time going down that little path. And then there was this tree that was just had to have been the model tree for the front page of the storybook, a children's storybook. It was just this mighty oak with its gnarly arms reaching out.
Yeah, and we took a photo of you underneath it. It's a beautiful, beautiful image. Yeah, fascinating place. You know, and yet so much of Britain today is secular, right? You know, there's a certain thread of skepticism. You know, we think of the States still as a very religious country. A lot of people still call themselves religious and attend church or are interested in that. And then a lot of our politicians, you know, call themselves, you know, Christian or whatever, because, you know, that it's still seen as an important
thing
to
do.
Yeah, whereas in Britain, you know, I don't think a politician would say they were Christian unless that would be different. It wouldn't be a normal thing to do. But there are people in Britain who are seeking spirituality, and of course we were very fortunate to meet two of them. That had been on my show before, and the first one was Richard Anderson, who works for the National Health Service in Devon, and is fascinated by you know, this kind of spirituality. He's been studying unity, but he's also been studying non-dualism and other areas, and has written a book, actually, that he's looking to get published, and it was wonderful to see him and his family. And then Mikey Whitehouse, who again is an author and a interfaith minister, former presenter on BBC, and now she's a comedian. She does all kinds of things, and she relocated to the borders of Dartmoor, a very wild area in Devon, about 3 years ago, and she took us all over Dartmoor on walks to ancient sites and the rivers there, and that was extremely beautiful, wasn't it?
Yes, it certainly was. It was on the moors. She lives right on the edge of them, and we walked out on the moors, and it just, or I mean, you could definitely get lost in that landscape, and it was so different from the rest of the landscape that we were experiencing in England. But because it had the short grass and it had the long prairie grass too, but it was just sort of a rolling hill type landscape, and it you knew you were on the moor.
Right, yeah, they're very different from the woods and the fields of the pastoral landscape that typifies that area. This is much more rugged and brown and those kind of upland grasses and sedges and
rocky
very rocky, very wild actually. And it was a lovely summer day, but I think it can change very quickly. And when those storms come in, it's a dangerous place, and there's large bogs where people can sink in and die and everything. So it's you've got to take care on that landscape. It's full of wild ponies, though, and we were very fortunate to have a group of ponies come very close to us so we could look at them, and some with their foals as well.
The ponies were, some had, their small foals with them, and where they were cautious but curious. And they were also molting and would use the rocks to scratch their backs up against and scratch off their old hair. And anyways, they were cautious, but they were also very curious and had got some great pictures of them also. The light was so entertaining on the moors. The light was very mystical and made you want to look at it longer.
Yes. Yeah, someplace you just want to let it sink in. Yeah.
Yeah.
And I believe it changes every part of the day too. It's got that quality that depending on the light shining on it, it looks different, and that makes it endlessly fascinating. But for those who are interested, you can check out Maggie Whitehouse's Facebook and website and all the things that she does. She's a person of many talents, and it was a pleasure to meet her and her husband Lion in their beautiful cottage there. Like I say, right on the underneath the big hill that leads up into Dartmoor. So very very beautiful part of the world. Just as we were leaving them, actually, we saw a deer on the road, and then a great owl swooped down in front of us. And just before that, when we were coming back from the moor, a hawk was picked up an animal, I think, and was just flying down the little lane in front of us and went for about half a mile in front of the car. And that was pretty amazing too. Mm-hmm. So it's a lot of nature, but it's a wild part of the world. So, very, very fascinating to be blessed with those sightings.
And then in the wild part of the world, you come across the foundation bases to old ancient homes, and you come across the circles, the rock circles that are fascinating in themselves. Because I mean, obviously the rocks were placed, and when your eye all of a sudden picks out the circle versus all of the rocks that are just hodgepodge scattered around you, and you realize that you've arrived somewhere because of that circle of stone.
Right. Yeah, we passed these Bronze Age houses, didn't we, that were quite amazing, because they must have been large houses. All that's left now is the rocky base, but you quite clearly see this circular form of the house. And one of them was very, very big indeed. It was probably either a chieftain's house or the main hall. And you think this is, 3,000-4,000 years old, and still there on the edge of the moor, and you think, my goodness, you know, it survived this long, and that's how well it was built initially, I guess, and is still there as an artifact on the landscape. So many people lived on Dartmoor back in those days and had quite sophisticated lives inhospitable place to us today, because climate can change and people were much hardier, weren't they? I think back in the day, you know, they weren't as in need of creature comforts as we are, I don't think.
Well, you would definitely need to be hardy to live in that landscape.
Yeah, really.
And bright.
So, you know, both Richard and Maggie, you know, are attracted to, you know, non-dual spirituality, as, of course, we are in unity. And as we mentioned at the top of the show, I think, you know, lots of people are finding that the old ways of dualism, of them and us, of right and wrong, and of either or, are no longer being satisfying to our souls, and that we're seeking, we're yearning for something more. And I think this is a power that's coming into our world, isn't it? That it's, you know, even though division and separation seem to be rearing their ugly heads, more and more people are understanding that in order to overcome this, you know, evil is not overcome by evil. As the Buddha said, evil is overcome by good, and there is only one good, and that's God. So I think non-dualism is the way forward for our planet, actually, that we have to come together as one. Yeah, do you agree?
I certainly do, and I think that one of the unique things about social media is it's helping us come together as one. I think people felt isolated, and I think Richard talked about that, about being isolated, about being, you know, there's a little group there, but it's a ways to go to get to another village and to meet up. But with social media, you have another connection. You know that there's others of like mind out there. And so the power of the non-dualism rises up, because where two or more are gathered, there you have that energy and that force that will overcome, that loving force that will overcome any evil.
And it's fascinating for me to, you know, be blessed to visit these folks, because, you know, like you say, we've connected on social media, but it's good to see them face to face as well. So that was a blessing. But the other side of it is we're still connected, right? Because there is this ability to connect with people all over the world, and this part of what we're doing on the Unity Online Radio Network is we're connecting with folks in 122 countries, I think it is, around the world, and that's a wonderful thing. I have many friends in all kinds of places as a result of this World Spirituality Show. So, you know, that is one of the blessings, I think, of modern technology. You know, we bemoan it sometimes when we see people with their heads stuck into their phones, you know, texting with dinner and not really interacting with others. But that's the downside. But the upside is that we are connected to people all over the world in a way that's, you know, not possible just a few years ago. And if I want to find out anything, I've got this huge encyclopedia that's just a couple of inches big on, you know, in my hand, and I could find out anything I want, basically. And to me, who loves books and go into libraries, it's like I have a library in the palm of my hand, and that's pretty amazing.
Well, with anything, with any tool, it can be a double-edged sword.
Yes. And
so knowing boundaries and understanding the sincere use of it and the use for good versus hiding away. It's like the workaholic that hides at the office. It's not productive, a productive way of living a happy and fulfilled life. But using the tools that we have, that where we can connect with each other and we can see that others feel the same way that we do, that it's not this hate-filled world out there, and it's not necessarily what the media is putting out there, that we have a way of connecting with each other, that love is strong and powerful, and that people do believe in that. And with that energy gathered together, there becomes a powerful force there that demands something different from pick up the sword and go to war.
Yes. And in fact, we have to, don't we? We have to shift our thinking in that regard. Otherwise, we're probably not going to serve our world very well. You know, we're called to a higher paradigm, a higher way of thinking around these things. And we talked about that in service on Sunday. That Unity churches and other groups like this are critical masses of people, you know, that are helping shift and move to a tipping point so that we can all begin to think differently about what's possible for us. I got to share a poem by one of my friends from one of my Oxford friends that we also visited in London. He lives in London, and Simon Wood is a great poet. He puts many of his poems up on his Facebook site, and he's a skeptic, but he has a spiritual core. And this morning he put up something called Morning Prayer, and this is a non-religious type person, but I like what he wrote as a morning prayer, and very simple but effective. He writes this. He says you can take this time and fill it with good, or you can let the bad gradually occupy the lot. Got it? Let go of the bad. Get going with the good. And that's a very simple poem, a simple prayer, isn't it? But that really sums up the Unity way of thinking, and that is take your mind off the problem and put it on God. You know, we always have that choice at any given time. You know, where's your energy going to go? And it, just to put it on the good is powerful. And we may say, well, you know, how much of a difference is that going to make? But if everybody decided to focus on possibility, it would make a huge, huge difference. And I'm an optimist. I think most people do focus generally on possibility and creativity and problem solving. So that's why the world is inherently good, I think.
And I think what happens when you focus on the good and what the connection that you have to make with it into action is that when you focus on the good, then a whole other perspective of the world opens up, and therefore other choices open up. Where if you're fear-based and you're cowering with the fear base of, oh no, they're going to get me, or that we're in danger, then all your attention is to that danger, and you're not thinking of how do I secure my safety, and how do I do it so that it's for the good of all. And all of a sudden, all other avenues open up for you, other perspectives open up for you, and they're just closed off. You're closing off half of the or more than half of your options when you're only in a fear-based way of thinking.
Yes, very good. You know, and there's bad everywhere, isn't there? Obviously, but there's
not
so going to
change.
Yeah, but there's so much good everywhere. I mean, my feeling in traveling in Britain, and of course it's hard to get a good feel for a country just in a couple of weeks. You have to immerse yourself in the culture for months, maybe even years, before you really understand it. But in general, wandering around in Britain, and we were in nice rural areas, so they didn't have the inner city difficulties, but it seemed, you know, very, very relaxed, and people were happy, and all was well. And I think this is true in the States too. You know, we have these insane atrocities, but then everything, you know, pretty much is normal, okay, wherever you go. And it's like we have to keep reaffirming this, that the vast majority of folks are good-hearted people and want the highest and best, and not focus as the media would have us sometimes, because by its nature it focuses on the problem and the atrocity, and we got to remember that these are aberrational things. They're not everyday things, and so we give thanks for that.
Well, I think you have to meet what is happening on a modern level too. You can't be in a hill fort on filter pen any longer. That is not practical anymore. You have to move forward, and you have to look to new and better ways to. And more modern, you know, modern ways of thinking through problem, because war is not going to go away. Mean people are not going to go away. Threats are not going to go away. But we can choose to take another look and find a more collaborative way of living with each other and living amongst each other.
And I think, you know, part of finding that is going to these places. You know, yeah, we don't live on hill forts anymore, but to take time and visit those places and feel the sweep of history, feel the peacefulness of the place now, and the birds singing, you know, the skylarks and the sheep and grazing or whatever, and look out on the landscape. It connects us in some way, doesn't it? And that it's restorative. You know, I think we have to find meaning in simple things. I mean, that's why people love bird watching, because they can see these beautiful animals around them, beautiful birds, and get some sense of connectedness to nature and to the beauty of things, and then go back into your world then with a little more of an optimistic viewpoint.
And I definitely agree with that. It does renew your soul and lifts up your heart to see these things and to be out in nature and to be one with it.
Is there anything else that I didn't bring up yet, Wendy, that you want to say about the trip that stands out to you?
Well, you know, I think, you know, one of the highlights for me was fossil hunting on the beach. It was that also, to think that as the ground erodes away, that it's exposing these old fossils and artifacts and bones and all sorts of things that it's, you know, that it exposes. And it just, it's like we it reminded me so much that we only know the tip of our world, and we only walk upon the crust of the earth, and that there's so much more to it that to be discovered.
Yes, very nice. Then you're referring, of course, to the Jurassic Coast, as it's called now, on the south coast of England, where a lot of formations were laid down during the Jurassic era and the era of the dinosaurs. And so there's lots of fossils, and actually they've discovered dinosaurs in the rocks in previous years, and there's a lot of ammonites and other fossils to be found. People are on the beach digging around, and where they got their hammers with them, you know, breaking open stones and whatnot. So yeah, fascinating. A fascinating part of the world.
I'd also like to say my own thank you to the Anderson family for opening their home to us and opening their knowledge of their area and taking us on a coastal walk and taking us to different parts of their little area and feeding us dinner. And the same for Maggie and Lion for opening up their cottage to us and hosting us. We enjoyed the conversation with both of them, and the Anderson family was just, they were so loving. Their three girls were the epitome of a loving family working together, so I give a shout out to that.
Yeah, absolutely, I concur with that. And it was fascinating. Of course, Richard is married to Isabella, who's originally from Paraguay, so that's cool too, you know, so that they have a family that's linked from thousands of miles away, and that's the wonderful thing I think about modern the modern world, is that we could travel and meet people and sometimes get married to them. And I'm the same. I'm married to a Texan, and I'm from Great Britain, and that's a wonderful thing, I think. And for those of us who are xenophobic and, oh, I don't like anything, I don't understand those strange people, you know, no, that's not really the way it is. That there's good in all cultures and all peoples, and it's wonderful to bring those together in a happy family. So it was lovely to see the Anderson family, like you say, three wonderful children as well. So very nice. I think it was Winston Churchill that said, you know, when asked why were we fighting the Nazis, and he says, because of the light on the uplands. And it's a strange comment, isn't it? But there is a certain light, a blue light, that blue-green light that you see in England in the distance that's very beautiful and very resonant. It's sort of a almost nostalgic. It takes you back to ancient times or whatever. But it has a certain quality, I think, because of the nature of the light, the limpid quality of the light. But the light on the uplands, you know, and I think living in Texas, and I can say the same thing, looking out on some of the vistas in the hill country, it's that which makes the place magic and makes you want to fight for it in a way, you know, that makes you want to stand up for it. In the Second World War, it was a literal fight. I think the fight today is to embody the qualities of compassion and love in a hateful, sometimes hateful world. And but these things are worth our energy out there, our struggle, our time, and our effort to bring into
our
being what we want,
our
thoughtfulness, our awareness. Yes, absolutely. So, folks, I hope this has been an interesting show. It's a little different from us. We're sort of a little travelogue here of Great Britain. We spent most of our time just in the south part of England, the West Country, in Somerset, Dorset, and Devon. That's where we spent most of our time. But it's and we didn't meet many Americans, actually, there, because I think a lot of Americans go to the typical tourist places, and justly so, because they are wonderful, but just getting off the beaten path into some of the more secret places can often yield something that we might get if we go to the places that are well-traveled. And I find the same in Texas. I like to go off into places where people don't normally go, because there's fascinating places in the state of Texas. And, yeah, there's great tourist places as well, but I think we learn more when we go off the beaten path. So that's something I'd like to end with, perhaps, is don't be afraid to go off the beaten path, both physically and spiritually, you know, and begin to explore the possibilities that are all around us. Wendy, what would you like to say as a final comment on today?
I've enjoyed all the beaten paths, off the beaten paths you've taken me on. You're a great tour guide.
Well, likewise, you've taken me places I might not have gone. And that's another thing, isn't it? We have to be willing to be open and teachable. And it's never too late, folks, for that to happen. You know, do something new, do something different. Appreciate something maybe you haven't looked at before as well. Because it's in the simple things, I think we find something extraordinary. Maybe there's a person in your life that you've sort of overlooked because you thought, oh, well, I don't think they're very interesting, or I've made my mind up about them. Maybe think again. You know, maybe there's something about those folks that maybe we haven't taken the time to notice. And that can be wonderful. I think the same in a relationship that we've had for years and years. And, oh, I know about everything about them. Or maybe we do at one level, but there's probably things that we don't know. And it's that unknown, it's that willingness to see differently, I think, that opens us up to wonder and actually keeps us young. And most of us want to stay young. So this is a good way to stay young, is to see things anew. I think that's the thing about, for me, going to Pilsner Penn after 48 years. It was like, you know, what did I see? What was I like when I was 15? What am I like now at 63? You know, and what's the commonality here? And it brought back a lot of memories because my uncle and my grandmother took me there. And so I got to visit with them in my mind as well. And like I say, plus the joy of bringing, you know, my loved one at this present time into that place. So it could be all kinds of things that can happen when we're willing to look again at the familiar, or at something that we've seen one time and then forgotten, and then go back and take a look at it again.
I bet you when you were 16, you didn't have a surprise streaker go by, though.
That's right. That's true. We can end the show. There's some naked hikers in Britain, and I think we have a few naked hikers here in America. But we actually saw the naked hiker. He just had a camel back on his back, and he sort of had a cape that he was wrapping around himself when he was on the road. But as soon as he was in a quiet place, the cape came off, and he was totally naked. So the naked hiker, we saw the naked hiker. It wasn't a very pretty sight, but it was what it was. So there you go. Okay, folks, on that note, next week, Matthew Fox joins me. Always great to have Matthew on the show. He's going to discuss his new book on the subject of the modern mystic writer and activist Thomas Merton. So I'm excited about Matt Fox being with me again next week. So John, tune in then. But right now, thank you, Wendy.
Thank you, Paul.
And thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll talk to you next week. All right, take care now. Bye-bye.
Thank you for tuning in to World Spirituality with Reverend Paul John Roach. Join us every Tuesday at 1 p.m. Central to further examine the spiritual teachings and religious traditions of our world, and to discover the universal truth principles present in all. World Spirituality, only on UnityOnlineRadio.org, the voice of an awakening world. This program is brought to you in part by Unity Church of Fort Worth in Fort Worth, Texas, celebrating the Christ Spirit in all people. Online at www.unityfortworth.org.
Have you ever considered that everything you think, say, and do is a prayer to the universe? What would your life be like if you activated the power of yes? Join Reverend Beverly Molander and her exciting guests on Affirmative Prayer, Activating the Power of Yes, to find out how they activated the power of yes in their lives, their communities, or even the world. If they can do it, you can too. Listen to Beverly Molander and her guests live every Monday at noon Central, 1 p.m. Eastern, on Affirmative Prayer, Activating the Power of Yes. Only on Unity Online Radio, the voice of an awakening world.
Have you ever stood by a railroad track when a fast train was approaching from a distance? As the train came nearer, the roar of the engine and the screech of the whistle seemed to rise in pitch and become louder. As it came alongside, it seemed larger than life and ready to engulf you. Then as the train passed by, the sound became lower in pitch and loudness until at last it was merely an echo in the distance. Just like that train, sometimes our experiences appear larger than life just before they pass us by. It seems they are going to engulf us, and then suddenly, they're gone. Perhaps you are in a larger-than-life situation right now. Changing your thoughts can result in positive changes in you and the world around you. This message has been brought to you by the Association of Unity Churches International. To find a Unity Church near you, visit www.unity.org.
God is formless, yet takes many forms. What goes around comes around. Chant the name of the Lord and be free. No one comes to the Father except through me. Ever been confused by the variety and apparent contradiction within world religions? Join Reverend Paul John Roach every Tuesday for insight into those principles held in common by all the great religious traditions in world spirituality, exploring the unity within all cultures and faith traditions. Using discussions, interviews, humor, insight, and practical advice, we will clarify the confusion and reveal simple yet profound truths. Call in with your questions and ideas and help break down the barriers that separate us from one another. That's World Spirituality with Paul John Roach, Tuesdays at 11 a.m. Pacific, 2 p.m. Eastern, here on Unity FM, the voice of an awakening world. Kumbaya, 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 kumbaya.
Let go of everyday worries and find your calm with positive prayer from Silent Unity, the newest in voice-activated technology, available on any Alexa-enabled device like the Amazon Echo. Each prayer and meditation on positive prayer will help strengthen, guide, and comfort you. To enable it, just say, "Alexa, open positive prayer." You can ask for a specific prayer on topics like healing, prosperity, and comfort. Give it a try today.